Welcome to the Coin World Podcast with your host, Jeff Stark.
And as I've said from day one of this show, this is a big tent hobby. There's a lot of room for folks.
And Larry Jewett.
And learning has been such a tremendous amount of this journey.
The Coin World Podcast.
The Coin World Podcast is delighted to be back for another episode. And boy, this is going to be a fun one. I'm Jeff Stark.
And I'm Larry Jewett. It's going to be fun, too, and want to thank the fine folks from the East India Company, and we're going to hear a lot more about that coming up here, because the East India Company is celebrating something that's kind of unusual here, and that's the Boston Tea Party anniversary with a special collection to commemorate the 250th anniversary. We'll give you some details on how you can get involved with this, another historic occasion marked by a special coin, and that makes it even better. I think back to all the different Revolutionary War, American Revolution, depending upon how you spin it, thinking about all that, and this is really, really neat, and that's why we want to share with you more information about this with our interview coming up and messaging regarding how you can get involved with this. So thank you for being a part of this, our Coin World Podcast. Once again, we appreciate your listenership and your support as we continue on in our efforts to educate, inform, and enjoy this great hobby.
And boy, there's so much fun stuff to talk about as usual. We'll get into that in a bit. And I will say, I have been a fan of, and I guess to a degree, a supporter of what the East India Company has been doing from basically day one. So this was, this was something I would do even if they weren't supporting us. It's amazing to think that, oh my gosh, here we are. We're coming up on 250th anniversary of the Tea Party in December, and that gets your mind thinking to, gosh, we're almost to the 250th anniversary of the nation itself. And I know there's discussion, talk, legislation to honor that with coinage changes. That is all, I believe, yet to be determined. So there's still a ways to go in the next 3 years as this comes together. And I think about, how does that compare to 50 years ago when the bicentennial was approaching? And by this time, there was already the pewter Comitia Americana medal restrikes, I believe, had been out, or certainly that there was awareness that they were coming and they were being sold in batches. There were these annual bronze and silver medals for the American Revolution bicentennial, ARBA, Bicentennial Association. You can find those in all sorts of, it's hardly a day goes by that I don't, when I visit a coin shop, I look through their sort of junk bins or whatever and find philatelic numismatic covers with these medals, the copperish bronze versions, not the silver. I've even found a silver medal in a bargain bin because they just glanced at it. No, it's that bicentennial stuff, and so I was happy to get that. There's not as much, I don't think, excitement and movement for commemoration for this 250th anniversary, maybe because it's, I don't know what the official term is for a 250th anniversary. 150th anniversary is sesquicentennial. And of course, bicentennial is real easy to say. Whatever it is for 250th, it's probably not easy to say. Maybe it just doesn't carry that cachet, but we'll reference that a little bit later in, this week in numismatic history. This kind of dovetails nicely. So anyway, what are you going to say, boss?
I was going to say, yeah, it's not easy. I wondered what it was going to be called, and it's called the semi-quincentennial. semi meaning half, quincentennial meaning 500 in this case. So half of 500 is semi-quincentennial. So I'm looking at the United States Semi-Quincentennial Commission was established back in the 2016 and enacted actually in 2020. And there were 33 members at one point and trying to get some kind of diversity here. But, I'm going to read up on that a little bit more because obviously we're going to be talking about this for some time. But when you said we still have a little time, I think that becomes one of the biggest thing is we really don't necessarily have as many time as we think we're going to have and, want to do it right here. And it's interesting, too, that you mentioned how long ago it's been since the bicentennial. But the fact of the matter is, probably once every other week, I still get a bicentennial coin in change. I mean, it blows my mind that I have trouble getting some from 2009. But, a bicentennial, maybe it's because, there were so many different ones, but the bicentennial is unique in its own way. And just the idea that, seeing the bicentennial coin and realizing it's 47 plus years now since we've done that. And I think those coin designs were very nice designs. We talked about, some of them in the past. I know we have. And so it's going to be quite interesting to see where we stand on the semi-quincentennial and what our coins are going to look like there. We'll be talking a little bit in our letters review about coin designs and some of the things, because those were letters from the time that we have chosen to talk about a little bit later on. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag there yet, but
this is a good time to, it occurred to me, we're talking about 2026, that's the semi-quincentennial, but that's also the centennial. I mentioned about three or four episodes ago, maybe longer than that now, about my idea for Route 66 commemoratives. I got a letter back from the Citizen Stamp Advisory Committee, and they have taken my suggestion under advisement. Now, they didn't say it that in those words. They said that they're considering that theme for stamps that year. So it is very possible that somebody else submitted the idea too, or also. I don't know. There's no way to know. And so in absence of any way to know, I'm going to give myself credit.
As well, you should. I mean, there's no sense that can't be disproven. So at this point, until somebody steps up with concrete proof,
what was that?
We know your. I said, if somebody steps up with concrete proof, then that's fine. But we know you made the submission, whether it's the actual one or not. Then let that be the subject of trying to figure things out. That's somebody else's concern. Meanwhile, you can say, and we've got it recorded from our podcast that you actually did that. So that's going to be our proof right there.
Yes. And proof is not just a condition of coin, but
there you go. It's a good universal term in that situation.
Anyway, so the reason I mention all this is because my mind is thinking about this as I look at this week in numismatic history. And we're a few days past it, but it's always a good day to celebrate Independence Day, July 4th. What happened on July 4th and the year that I'm thinking? Well, this was 1926. Well, that was the 150th anniversary, the sesquicentennial. And on that day, there was the ceremonial first striking of the American Independence sesquicentennial commemorative coins. So how apropos that you have a ceremony for the actual event being held on the actual day of the event. And I don't know, and maybe I should have grabbed my red book, or there's other stuff here. I'm in the home office this week in Sydney. Go look in the library. I wonder if any of those were set aside, if you can actually obtain one that was actually from that moment. But that's certainly the case today, as I referenced in a few weeks about when we talked to the Royal Mint about the sovereign struck on the day. That's a neat little niche collecting area to find things that you have identifiable to a specific moment in time. And interestingly, I didn't mention it in the past, But the Turkish mint about 20 years ago, 18 years ago, somewhere in there, they created a coin that you could strike when you visited the mint, and it had interchangeable dye material so that you could update the date. You know, every day there would be a new coin, basically, because it had the date would be updated, and this was within like a ringed area of the design, so that it was easily transferable, if you will, easy to update with the machinery. And I have several of those pieces. There seems to be a bunch related to a handful of days. I want to say like January 8th, whether it was 2006 or 5, I can't remember the year, but it's a really neat thing. And if you can find one of your birthday, how cool would that be? I have not yet found one of my birthday. I've just seen about 3 or 4 different dates so far. I believe the catalog, the Krause, the standard catalog of world coins, at one time, maybe it still does, they had a list of about 20 or 30 dates that are known for sure. But that's a fun little piece. And when I stumble upon those and the price is right, I do end up adding those to my collection as well. So anyway, that's a long deviation from July 4th and the actual day of events. But that was this week in numismatic history.
Well, and this is a perfect time to, because we're talking about July 4th and it becomes an anniversary. And this is a perfect time to tell you more information about the anniversary coming up in December, but being celebrated numismatically here in the month of July, as the East India Company invites you to grab a cup of tea and join us as we celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Boston Tea Party, the event that sparked the American Revolution. The East India Company is proudly unveiling a new commemorative collection developed in partnership with the Boston Tea Party Ships and Museums and designed by renowned American coin artist Joe Iskowitz. It'll be released on July 31st. Strictly limited edition, the stunning new collection captures the scene as, guided by the lamplight of one of the leading sons of liberty, hundreds of disguised colonists boarded 3 ships and poured 342 chests of East India Company tea into the icy waters of Boston Harbor in an act of peaceful protest. Now, the East India Company collections captures remarkable stories, anniversaries, and unique moments in time. We preserve, honor, and celebrate those stories on precious metal legal tender coins, combining traditional handcrafted skills passed down from generations of expert engravers with the latest modern techniques to create coin collections the customers can cherish, collect, and save for future posterity. Now, if you want to register your interest and do so before the launch, please go to the website www.TheEastIndiaCompany.com. And once again, that's www.TheEastIndiaCompany.com. You'll find out more information there and how you can add this. And if you're a student of history, certainly then one of the things you may not have known, and simply something I'm going to use as a trivia question someday, was what company's tea was dumped into the harbor? Well, of course, 342 chests of East India Company tea. So get that coin to celebrate. It's going to be a teaching moment for you and for the next generation, generations to come, as the 250th anniversary is rapidly approaching.
Well, shoot, you stole the trivia question away from me. Just kidding. We'll get to that in a moment, but we go from tea to Cheerios. And the reason we do that is because we looked at the for this week in coin world history, this week in coin world history, we looked at the July 4th, 2005 issue. 2005 was the year that Sanjiv Mehta bought the East India Company brand, and he would later revive that, and that led to a bunch of coins issued over the last 13 years, including these new ones that we talk about in just a moment. So what was the big story on the cover of Coin World July 4th, 2005? Well, this was about the Sacagawea Cheerios 2000 P dollars that have different reverses. And our friend and colleague Paul Jilks has the story that says that collectors who found one of the 5,500 2000 P Sacagawea dollars randomly hidden inside Cheerios brand cereal products during a General Mills advertising promotion received an unexpected bonus unknown until now. These coins were struck with a reverse die produced from a different hub than that used for the regular issue Sacagawea dollar. These so-called Cheerio dollars, as they're known, are really a fun and fascinating and valuable modern addition to the hobby. Coming up on, 23 and a half years ago, that I remember when that promotion happened, and everybody got a Lincoln cent unless you got the Sacagawea dollar, I believe it was, and there was, I think it was like 1 in 100 would get the dollar, and something like that. And these are a fun little area of the hobby to be aware. NGC was shared images of the two different ones, the central line of the tail feather shaft on the coins. The Cheerios one has a raised line and the regular and with more detail, and the one on the circulating coin has a lot fewer details. So a very fun little bit of history and trivia. Maybe you can use that as well, Larry, for your trivia.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunities for sure there, but yeah, that's an interesting fact. And I know there was a lot of hope, and a lot of people were happy just to get a Lincoln cent. I remember when, you know, premiums were a big deal. They don't seem to be a big deal with products anymore, but I even go back to the day where you got, you know, glasses in laundry detergent. So that, you know, that's, I think, anyway, you know. But oh, there's a couple of interesting letters on page 11 of that issue, July 4th, 2005. I have to take issue with the women on the Citizens Coinage Advisory Committee that are offended by having liberty, freedom, or independence glorified on our coins. What a wonderful way to spread American values all over the world. The Americans are so free, they even tout that virtue on their coinage. What else could China put on its coins besides benign pandas? Have more children or we will kill them? That was political back then for sure. Then it goes on and says, Canada could put out a bilingual Welcome American Draft Dodgers coin. Wouldn't that go over big in the United States, where all the money is, by the way? American coinage should herald our hard-won values. Freedom, liberty, and independence, not be ashamed of them. Tom Natoli wrote that. And one final letter on that. Another letter writer said, good grief, never thought I'd see the day. So the Citizens Coinage Advisory Committee thinks that liberty, freedom, and independence are too political. Heaven forbid that we should offend some oppressive foreign dictatorship by showing our ideals. It seems to me it would be a great opportunity to profess those ideals to the world. I just want to go on record that I, for one, do not agree with the CCAC on this one. And that was from Dick Fielding. So you can see that a hornet's nest got stirred up back in 2005. And just interesting how sometimes when we read these letters from long ago, or in this case, 18 years ago, some of the same mindsets still around.
As Patrick Henry famously said, give me liberty head nickels or give me other coins.
What about winged liberty?
That's fine too. Okay. On the wings of winged liberty. No, anyway. So very good. It is interesting to hear that again, as you know, with the passage of time giving perspective. So that was from this week in Coin World history. But now I think it's time for you to be put to the test as proxy for the listener. Last episode, I just grabbed a random question. This is an expert level question from the Coin World Trivia game. And it was one that I was actually familiar with from writing in the past. And we've talked about this general theme before with a guest on the show. And we've even mentioned this specific ship not too long ago. But the question was, what ship appears on two different inaugural medals of Franklin Delano Roosevelt? So it's an inaugural medal. We've talked about that. We've talked about other types of medals related to this ship. Do you have any idea to what ship I refer?
I'm going to have to guess on this one, because I think, been thinking back to recent memory on some of the things we've been talking about here, and I know you recently made a trip to Boston, so I'm going to go with the Constitution on this one, USS Constitution.
Also known as Old Ironsides, and you are correct. Roosevelt, I believe, had four different inaugural medals, and two of them show the USS Constitution. So very good. You got that. Now, I do want to know, because we're talking about also there in Boston, the Boston Tea Party with East India Company here in just a moment. There is a modern commemorative coin from the U.S. that really can be pinned to or related to another moment in Revolutionary War history. What coin is that, and who does it show? This is from an event that happened in the same town as the famous Tea Party. So I don't want to give too much more beyond that away, because that might just say it all. But think about that. We don't talk about it, I believe, with East India Company right now. But think about it as you're listening to my interview. I shouldn't say you were unavailable. My interview with the fine folks at East India Company. Here that is. The Coin World Podcast is delighted today to be joined by two folks that I have been thrilled to know for, I want to say, at least a decade each. Joanna Mold, who is managing director of East India Company, and Lionel LeConte, who is business development manager at East India Company. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us, Jeff. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
So, you know, I've always been a fan of the East India Company, what you guys have done, but I think for somebody who's coming into this very new, maybe we should explain what the East India Company is. I mean, I hear that name and I think of the company that was like involved in trade 200 years ago, and they had their own coins. And I mean, it's a whole series of coins that, you know, different issues, annas and other denominations, like 200 years ago. How does that relate to East India Company today?
I think you're right, really, Jeff. The company's history dates back to 1600 and Queen Elizabeth I. So it has this kind of presence in our subconscious, really, of hundreds of years, really, of kind of trade and merchants and commodities, etc. It's probably one of the oldest and most influential companies, which essentially was responsible for driving this kind of period of unprecedented growth in global commerce and trade from its foundation in 1600 until it was dissolved under Queen Victoria in 1874. So it's got this kind of vast history, not just in Britain, but also across the world. In 2005, the East India Company was bought by a Mumbai-born businessman and entrepreneur called Sanjiv Mehta. He set about kind of creating the company in its new avatar in 2010 when it launched again. And it really is a company that deals in and makes and sells some of the world's most desirable lifestyle products. We have a portfolio spanning fine foods, jewelry, rare objects, coins, drinks. We do an incredible gin, which is one of my favorites, homeware, and really
biscuits.
Yes, cookies, biscuits, jams, everything. And really the spirit of the company is the same today as it was many years ago in terms of that pioneering spirit and a merchant mindset. Our philosophy is to foster these kind of remarkable connections across the world, from the exotic East as it was in that day to the regal West as it was. And how do we connect these parts of the world together and really create very unique products through connections between different parts of the world? What drives us is ensuring that we always create products which use the finest craftsmanship, ingredients, innovations from across the globe, and bring them together to our headquarters in London and trade them across the world. I think as far as coins are concerned, which is the area that Lionel and I work in and adore the most, it's quite a... It was certainly one of the most important commodities of the East India Company's time. They were actually the very first items that were put on board EIC ships in 1601, when its merchants first set sail. They received a royal charter from Queen Elizabeth I, granting them the monopoly on trade to explore the East Indies. Legend has it that the Queen, reveling from the recent success of defeating King Philip of Spain, King Philip II, I think, of Spain, in the Spanish Armada, she wanted to demonstrate to the world the might of the British naval power and instructed the Royal Mint to strike England's very first coinage, colonial coinage, which was called the Teston coin. From there on, really, the company began to use coinage and precious metals to really create the foundation of its trade. It was responsible for, in the 17th century, it had a partnership with Moses Mercator, where its ships were transporting so much gold across the seas during the late 17th century that a purpose-built vault had to be built. Established in the Bank of England. And that is considered to be the beginning of the rise of London as one of the world's leading bullion markets. So the touch points that the company had, when you start looking at its history, so vast that today, one of the principal things that we try to do is make sure that all of our products are of the highest quality and have a really strong sense of authenticity. That's especially important when we make collector or investment coins. So our history in coinage really dates from the very first ships in 1600.
And the newest products, I should say, that you all are coming out with have a very neat story to tell, and there's a connection we can explore with that to the East India Company. The reason we're talking today is because East India Company is marking the 250th anniversary this year of the Boston Tea Party. And you have something like five, six coins. There's a 1 ounce silver, a 2 ounce silver, 5 ounce silver, kilo silver, 1 ounce gold, 5 ounce gold. What is the connection, though? We can get into the design in a minute, but what's the connection with East India Company and the Boston Tea Party? Why celebrate that? Why mark this anniversary this year?
The anniversary, 250th anniversary of the Boston Tea Party, is really quite special for us. On the 31st of July, we'll launch the first coins in the series with this limited edition proof collection that you mentioned. Possibly the reason that the East India Company is most well known is for its involvement in the tea trade. It's the reason that us Brits and many other nations in the West wake up and drink a cup of tea before doing anything else in the morning. You know, that's the first thing that I do. But for this reason, the connection between the East India Company's trade in tea and the tea that was thrown overboard at the Boston Tea Party is such a strong connection that for us, the anniversary is very important to celebrate and commemorate, really. We were really lucky and fortunate to work with the Boston Tea Party Ships and Museum in Boston to develop the program to create a collection for coins, but also for the other products that we've got coming out across the lifestyle brand. It's just such a fascinating moment in history, I think, and especially because it can be considered as really the beginning of the start of the American Revolution. When you think about that as a history buff like myself and Lionel, it's something you can't help exploring. And I think that the impact of this rebellion, if you like, just became the first steps that the nation took in its destiny to become independent. And I think what really interested me and certainly the team that developed the product for us is the fact that this was very much a meticulously planned and executed event. And it was organized in such a peaceful and respectful way. Nothing was stolen. No damage was made to any of the ships, the crew, or any other items. The tea that they were throwing overboard was East India Company tea, which obviously has a direct relevance to us.
342 bundles, I think.
342 chests of tea.
Yes, but
yeah, 11 million cups of tea. That is. Yeah, and I think the value of it, when you think about the value at the time, it was valued at around about £10,000, which in today's money is about 1.7 million. So I think it was quite a precious cargo. But the fact that, you know, that even after the Sons of Liberty had thrown the tea overboard, they're sweeping the decks and putting everything back as they found it, apart from the tea, of course. So it's a really nice anniversary for us to commemorate. Yes, it was EICT, and I'm sure that, you know, the ship owners were not best pleased. But the symbolism of that event, I think, is something which it really should be celebrated and commemorated in this way.
So. I get, this is in December, the anniversary, but the designs are out now. So let's talk about the designs of design, I should say, singular. The one side, but then we can talk about the obverses as well. You know, you have the moonlit night, the Old North Church in the background. You have these party goers, if you will, dressed up, tossing tea into the harbor. How did that design come about? And is there a connection maybe that we should know about in the design?
So we're really fortunate to work with Joe Liskovich on the design of the coin. We've worked with him a couple of other projects, and he is probably, certainly, personally, I think one of the nicest designers that we've worked with. Incredibly talented and just gets it, really. He understands the emotion that we want to convey from capturing this event on a piece of precious metal. And he worked really hard. He's just incredibly talented and created this scene which captured everything that we wanted. Obviously, the event took place at night, so you've got the moonlit background. You've got the beautiful skyline of Boston Harbor under the moonlight. There's the three ships in the background. So the Eleanor, the Beaver, and the Dartmouth, which are docked carrying this precious cargo. The act of actually throwing the tea overboard, which is obviously the first thing that everybody thinks about when they think about Boston Tea Party. I don't know if you can see on the images that we've sent through to you, Jeff, the EIC chop marks on the little tea boxes showing that it's East India Company tea being thrown overboard. You've got this son of one of the Sons of Liberty with the holding the lamplight, calling the protesters to action. I think he really captured an awful lot of party going, if you like, within this design. It's really quite beautiful and very detailed, and it made sense for us to use that classical scene to commemorate the anniversary.
And yes, it's a most authentic American theme. We can agree. The other side of the coin, the obverse of the coin, let's talk about that for a minute. This has to, I guess, reflect the current monarch. What's the issuing country for these? And let's talk about how the monarch is depicted. And was there a problem or issue with the program because of the change in monarch when Queen Elizabeth II died and the transfer to Charles? That had to be a lot of, you know, anxiety as they're trying to figure out, okay, when are new designs going to be approved and what's it going to look like and what are we going to have to use and all that. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the history of EIC and coinage is directly related to the monarchs of the past. So, as I said earlier, Queen Elizabeth I was the first monarch to give the company coins to take on their first journey to the East. But over its lifetime, it was actually given the right to mint coins under Charles II. That kind of took hold really across all of EIC's coinage from about 1837, which is when King William introduced a coinage act, which meant that all of the East India Company or British India coins, if you like, could feature the royal monarch on the other side. When we started looking at reintroducing legal tender coinage, we started a partnership with the government of St. Helena. Now, we purposely chose St. Helena because St. Helena was this kind of small volcanic rock in the South Atlantic, which actually became one of the East India Company's most prized possessions. It provided this vital refueling port for company ships going to the East. It's probably more famous, actually, for holding Napoleon captive, but at the time, it was the very engine behind these ships being able to travel such vast distances. So in 2012, we began to issue coins with the government of St. Helena. All St. Helena coins are developed and issued, created, manufactured, sold, etc., by the East India Company. And we were quite honoured, really, to gain from that the ability to feature Queen Elizabeth II on the obverse. So when on September 8th, when she sadly passed away, I guess everything kind of stopped in essence. I think it was the first time really that people in the UK certainly had experienced this change in monarchy, and she'd always been there. So I think even though we all knew that it was going to happen and we could be prepared as we could be as prepared as we possibly could be, it wasn't something that we really realized would happen until it happened, if you understand what I mean. And I think coin designs and coin approvals, they were obviously affected. We start working usually on coin programs 6 to 9 months ahead, from kind of design at start to producing the coin and making it available to collectors. It was certainly an obstacle we had to navigate our way through. I think all of our coins go through a very strict approval process with St. Helena and the Royal Household especially. That normally would take about 6 to 8 weeks, but obviously everything stopped in its tracks while we waited for that instruction from the Royal Household as to what we can do, what we can't do, what effigy do we use, etc. Eventually, an effigy was created by Glyn Davies, who was a fabulous Welsh coin engraver, and improved by His Majesty the King for us to use on St. Helena coinage. So this meant that we could start then to apply for approvals. But of course, the process was understandably a lot slower than it normally would have been. We needed to kind of learn, I guess, a new way of operating, just as any other coin issuer needs to do. But I'm really happy to say those crinkles, if you like, have been ironed out now, and things have run a lot more smoothly than they did at that time. Fortunately, the Boston Tea Party coins were some of the very first to be approved by His Majesty King Charles. So it meant that because we are obviously working on a deadline, because we've got a fixed anniversary, we could really move a lot quicker and start developing and minting that coin, especially so that we can release it in time for the anniversary.
So that's a good time to segue into the reality now. The coins are unveiled. I guess when this goes out, will they all be available for purchase, or are they going to roll out over time? What's the timeline look like for when these will be? Are you doing pre-sale with delivery later? Are these struck and ready to go? What does that look like for the proof coin launch now?
The coins will be have been struck. They are in our headquarters in London. We won't release all of the coins at the same time. So the first release is 1 ounce gold and silver, 5 ounce gold and silver, and the kilo. And then around September time, we'll have a really special edition ultra high relief silver 2 ounce coin, which will be a kind of like, I guess, a little bit of a flagship high relief, lovely antique finish. And that will be sometime in September. So yes, the coins will be available from the 31st of July for sale. And they also, what I'm particularly proud of, I think, is the way that the team have developed the whole presentation of these products. They're really quite beautiful. We've got a really lovely bespoke tea box packaging, presentation box with booklet and a certificate of authenticity. There's even some special edition 250th anniversary Boston Tea Party tea bags, so you can kind of enjoy a brew while you admire Joel's design.
It's a real rum experience.
Yeah, it is. It's something that we've really thought through. We've been working on it for just over 2 years now, so it's something that's taken a long time to develop, but I think it's something that we're certainly as a company, we're really proud of. One of the nice touches, I think, about EIC products as a whole is those small little things that make a big difference. Even on the base of each of the boxes, there's this game, which is the Nine Men Morris game. Do you know that, Jeff?
I am not familiar with that. It might be an English thing.
Do you know, what about cowboy checkers? Does that make sense?
I have not heard that, but, you know, I have lived a sheltered life, so maybe others out there listening know, explain it real quick, and then how does that fit in?
Okay, so Nine Men Morris is a game which we've included on the base of every tea box presentation case, and it's inspired by the Robin's tea chest, which is thought to be the last remaining intact tea chest left from the Boston Tea Party. There's some story about it on our website, but this game, which is, I'm told, is sometimes referred to as cowboy checkers, was engraved on the bottom of tea boxes by the sailors making this kind of fast, long transatlantic crossing to kind of while away the hours. So those kind of little touches, and on the bottom of each box, you'll have that. And then there'll also be tea bags included. I think as a presentation, it's a really quite a unique product. And hopefully collectors will enjoy it and be able to appreciate the significance and the symbolism of that anniversary and all those special touches.
Awesome. I'm holding out for the chocolate covered macadamia nuts myself, but
yeah, me too.
The cool thing though is this is the anniversary of the Boston Tea Party. For those maybe who aren't aware, is December 16th, 1773 was the event. So December 16th this year. There's a lot of time between now and then. My sense is, I don't want to put myself out on a limb too much, but my sense is that this isn't the last we've heard of Boston Tea Party and EIC stuff this year. Maybe there will be some more things, some special things coming up. We want to know about them, and we want to share them with CoinWorld readers and listeners as things develop. Can you promise me that?
Yes. I think we've got an awful lot going over the next 6 months in relation to the anniversary itself. We've enjoyed a really nice close partnership with the Boston Tea Party Ships and Museum in Boston for quite some time. Some of our tea is being shipped over there to be used in the reenactment on the anniversary date. So we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to attending that as well. I think that'll be a real experience for all of us to see what actually happened and relive that moment. I'm really looking forward to that. We also have an event in London, which will commemorate the date that the ships left London for Boston. We've got some special edition tea caddies coming out, which will launch in September, which are based, it's a really quite a unique blend of tea, which is based on the actual tea thrown overboard. Sachets of those will be in the coin presentations as well. So every coin customer will receive a number of tea bags to be able to taste the tea that was thrown overboard. At least somebody gets to taste it this time. And then we've got, I can't tell you too much about the other product we've got coming up, but it's around about September time, we'll be having a Boston Tea Party inspired collection, which is related to another tea party altogether. Let's just say it's more of a fictional tea party.
Stop here now.
Yeah, I don't know if you can guess what that is, Jack. But let's say it's a quintessentially British collection. So watch this space.
Wonderful. So we are running late for a very important date, perhaps. So thank you so much for all the time today. You know, the podcast listeners, should know that I have done what I can do, the best I can do to share the EIC story over the years. I love what you guys do. And there's a lot of cool stuff. And this is just the beginning of some really cool stuff that I think you guys, I know that you're always forward thinking and always looking ahead. So I can't wait to see what else comes down the pike.
Oh, thank you very much, Jeff.
That's the right moment, Jeff, to thank you so much for your continuous support. It's a pleasure to meet you every time somewhere in the world, at least 2 or 3 times a year. And thank you so much for everything you teach us as well.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine.
And that was my interview with East India Company representatives to talk about these fun new Boston Tea Party coins. As I've said before, I like these folks, and I've always tried to support them when we have the space and the time. They've often brought a really neat historical flair to modern new issues, which not every issuer does. So that was fun, at least for me, to learn about and talk about with them.
And you owe it to yourself to go to their website and learn more about this and how you can add these coins to your collection once they become available. And that website, once again, is www.theeastindiacompany spelled out. Once again, www.theeastindiacompany. And that'll get you all the information you need there. Find out more about this program. And again, to take it, I mean, this is the 250th anniversary. This is a moment in time. It will not be repeated. And, they were involved whether they wanted to be or not. So now they might as well just go ahead and capitalize upon that using an American designer to create the coin, who's an award-winning designer, and his design's very familiar to a lot of our collectors as well. So again, check that out at www.theeastindiacompany.com. That's a good thing for me to do for the rest of the day here. I can spend some time on that site. That's a great site.
Yeah, and the rest of the day, it's we're at the end. This is time to now we say goodbye to all the can. What's I can't remember the Hillbillies song, but no, it's a good time to say thanks again for listening, for supporting us, and hopefully you learned something, had a little fun.
Wait a minute. Did you just make a Beverly Hillbillies reference here?
I did.
Okay, let me tell you something I just learned today from a recent visit to Nashville, that Louise Scruggs, who was the wife of Earl Scruggs, received a phone call regarding the Beverly Hillbillies, and they said they want Earl and Lester to do the theme, and she told them no. And it wasn't until they were able to fly her and the families out to Los Angeles. It took them 2 days to convince her that it was okay for them to do that, that they wouldn't be stereotyped. And so they did it, and it became one of the most successful things.
Wow.
Now it's time to say goodbye to all good company. Yeah, there you have it.
I actually have record album, a CD of, remember those CDs? That's the round plasticky metal looking thing that has music on it.
Yeah.
I have a couple of those of Flat and Scruggs. And once I get back home to St. Louis after visiting the home office this week, I will have to pull that out and give it a listen, because I do like me some bluegrass. And Flat and Scruggs are, among the pantheon of bluegrass musicians, they were quite influential and important. And of course, they had their start with Bill Monroe and had the falling out and all that. But it's Bill Monroe is another big name in the hobby. And what does this have to do with anything to do with coins? Well, Kentucky's state quarter has a reference to the bluegrass state, right?
Right. And
the Tennessee quarter has the musical instruments on it. So
there you have it. And see, that's the references right there. Plus, we're talking about listening. because we listen to music, and we thank you, the listeners, for listening to our podcast right here. Regardless of what your musical taste might be, we hope that you were informed today, and we appreciate that. Keep listening, subscribe. Thank you once again to the East India Company for providing us this podcast sponsorship, and we'll learn more about that as the month of July goes along until it's in. But in the meantime,
happy collecting, y'all.
Thank you for listening to the Coin World Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.